Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome to another edition of More Than a White Man's Game, a baseball podcast on the House of L Network. I'm your host, Maddie Lee, and this week we're actually having two guests on. They're co-authors of a book that I'm just going to tease right now, and we'll get to the actual title and the reason behind it in just a minute. But first, I've got to give you a little backstory for this all to make sense. I know we talk about baseball here on this podcast, but I am also a brand new hockey fan. And when I say brand new, I mean brand new, as in I'm from Seattle, got excited about the Kraken, and then realized if I'm a Kraken fan, I should probably know, you know, the basic rules of hockey, that sort of thing. So I called on, if you guys know, Evan F. Moore, going with the full names here on this introduction. He is a writer for the Sun Times. He covers culture and entertainment for them. Also real big into hockey. And so he's been helping me with my basic hockey knowledge. He sent me several YouTube clips on rules and such. So whatever knowledge I have for the inaugural season of the Kraken, all credit goes to him. He's been phenomenal. But he's one of those people who, because I moved during a pandemic, we only know each other through Twitter, and he listened to the podcast, which is awesome, and he reached out and told me that he liked it, which is a good time now to tell you guys all to rate, subscribe, all of that. Give us 5 stars. But we went back and forth, and I started thinking about his book, which has been on my radar for a while now. It's called Game Misconduct, Hockey's Toxic Culture and How to Fix It. And I'm super excited about this book. I have it pre-ordered. It comes out in October. And I got to thinking, like, yes, I host a baseball podcast. That is what we do here. But how perfect would it be for a podcast called More Than a White Man's Game to go into a book called Game Misconduct, Hockey's Toxic Culture, and How to Fix It? I do think there's a lot of value in different sports learning from each other, and we'll get into some of that, but it just seemed like too good of an opportunity to pass up. I'm sure there's plenty of hockey and baseball fan crossover here in Chicago. And if not, like, I'm here along for the ride with you if you do not know much about hockey. But these are definitely issues that there are parallels with baseball for sure, is what I started finding as I talked to Evan. And because we're super lucky, also got his co-author, Josh Vina Shaw, incredible hockey writer. So glad that she could make the time. I got to meet her on this Zoom call. So both Evan and Josh Vina came on to talk about their new book. And after, we'll get to the interview in a second. And then afterwards, I'll give you some of my thoughts on how it ties into baseball. So let's bring in that interview. Evan, Josh Vina, thank you so much for joining me. And I'm so excited to talk about your book.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's definitely interesting how all this all put together, and who would have thought in 2021 that a black man from the South Side of Chicago and a South Asian woman from New Jersey are put together a hockey book that will probably piss a lot of folks off. At least a good amount, at least.
That's awesome. Well, a little bit of anger sometimes gets the wheels rolling, right? So let's start there with, I want to hear the origin story of this book. How did the idea for a book on this topic come about, and how did you two start working together?
Well, it actually all started with a tweet, as most things do nowadays. Something or the other had made me mad about hockey again. So I just like tweeted out there, someone should pay me to write a book on hockey's toxic culture. And I meant it, but I also didn't really mean it. I was kind of just saying it. And then a bunch of people were like, yes, please write it. And then Evan reached out to me. He said, you know what? I was thinking of doing something like this. Do you want to co-write it? So I was like, sure. And that was really how it happened.
Wow, that's awesome. Did you guys know each other before that, or just kind of Twitter friends?
It was Twitter friends, but we actually met in person a few years ago. She was in town covering the Frozen Four, you know, the NCAA hockey tournament. And I was covering it for the Daily Herald at the time, and she was there with, I think it was Kyle's Hockey News, I think it was. And what I remember most, honestly, is like she had her curling iron getting her hair together. You know, we're all at the table. We probably, some of the ladies and other folks who got a lot of hair who, you know, on the beat probably had to do something like that at some point. So I was just like, okay, she really, I was like, that was my first impression. But okay, she really, you know, getting it done. So, yeah.
That's awesome. So
I've like completely forgotten about Chicago because I just like, blocks it out. But I have like no recollection of doing that, but that sounds exactly like something I would do.
That's so funny. So you two have the beginnings of an idea, right? But hockey's toxic culture covers a lot, and I know you guys cover a lot in this book between racism, homophobia, xenophobia, bullying, sexism, violence, all of that. How did you go about, I guess, kind of narrowing the focus within those topics, deciding what all you wanted to cover? Because I'm sure you could have written like 7 books on those topics combined.
Yeah, well, I mean, because as for me, the blind spot was kind of like, was the intricacies and nuances of youth hockey and college hockey. And that's right up, you know, that's in right in Josh Vina's wheelhouse. And for me, obviously, issues with diversity and and some of the stuff I had seen, like playing, you know, being a fan growing up, but also later on in life, learning how to skate and learn how to play and being in on beer league teams and some of the things I noticed over time. So we kind of put our mark down like the Avengers, you know. We put together our different different things where that we were more of an expert in, and we put that together. But it was stuff I had when stuff she wrote, the chapter she wrote, I had a couple things, and some of the chapters I wrote, she had a thing. So it was completely collaborative all the way through. And I would say, like, he looked at my text messages from the past years. Like, I would say, like, 70 to 75% is Jasmina.
Yeah, I mean, no, when you say you could write 7 books about this, like, I have people going up to me being like, for the sequel, and I'm like, no, I can't do that, please. But yeah, because each topic definitely within itself could be a book on its own. And I mean, I think it's necessary to cover a broad range of topics. And I mean, it's so hard. It was really hard to kind of narrow it down to, like, okay, this is what we're going to focus on. These are the examples we're going to pick. And this is what we're going to write about it. Because it's really hard to, like, cover all the nuances of these different topics and really look into, you know, why it happens in such a short amount of space. I mean, I think the benefit is that there are some similarities, like, or not similarities, but it kind of overlaps in the way that things happen and how they get dealt with. Like, I ended up taking like sexual assault, domestic violence, systemic abuse, and hazing, because they all sort of fall under like the similar category. So that kind of helped me in the sense that when you're addressing why one thing happens, you're not just applying it to one topic. You're also applying it to these other topics because, you know, why systemic abuse happens has a lot to do with why bullying and hazing still happen. Like, it's all sort of intertwined like that. So, like, that kind of made it a little bit, that was kind of the benefit about tackling all these topics at once. You know, they do have, each topic also has like its own, some they have their own specific reasons as to why it happens, but, you know, like, toxic masculinity is a big reason why we have things like homophobia, why we have things like sexism. So sort of tackling all these different topics, it was helpful that that was the case, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And so you're able to point to these kind of through lines that you wouldn't have been able to if you're not taking such a expansive approach.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you guys have, do either of you have a favorite chapter?
I have a least favorite chapter.
Yeah. That's a good question, honestly, because I can always catch myself, even though we've officially had, you know, turned in the book and it's been copy edited and fact checked and everything else, I do find myself looking at the old document at times. And I'll say I think the chapter about, I won't say it's a chapter, it's more so like a subset in the chapter where we talk about white backlash in the NBA. And growing up in, I guess not really growing up in Chicago, but I'm one of the few people I know of that follows hockey and basketball pretty much at this, you know, pretty intense about it. Mm-hmm. And over time, I just noticed, particularly locally here in Chicago, when the Blackhawks were doing really well and the Bulls were kind of doing, you know, but you had, you know, Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and Luol Deng and all these guys. And we all know, like, basketball here in Chicago is like no other. And, you know, I just started hearing on Sports Talk Radio about Blackhawks fans, like, not liking the coverage the Bulls are getting, and it progressively, this, in my view, got more racist and racist, you know. And I've been writing about this stuff for a long time, like, just noticing how players, how a Derrick Rose, how a LeBron James, and Dwayne Wade and Melo and all the NBA guys, how they're talked about and our hockey guys are talked about. You know, you got somebody like, you know, a Patrick Kane or a Jonathan Toews, and that fan base views them as, oh, the kid next door who made good. And they look at, you know, the aforementioned NBA player, this people who didn't deserve what they got, they're spoiled, they're selfish. And you think about it, you know, LeBron James is an American success story, born to a teenage mother, lived in and out of housing projects, went back to the community and built a whole school thinking of all the things he needed at that age and provide for these kids. And you said, Matt, you covered the NBA before. Like, you remember, like, that game where he, in the finals against the Warriors, when he tried to dunk on Draymond Green and tried to end his career. He was working pretty fucking hard. Everybody saw that shit. Like, this is, you know, and so, yeah, that subset of that chapter is basically about why hockey had this inferiority complex with the NBA, because the Stanley Cup final and the NBA finals happened I mean, you see these people like chirping at the NBA for no good reason. Like, hockey is an awesome sport. Why do you need to prop yourself up by knocking down a sport that you say you don't like, you don't watch, but you can't stop mentioning it?
Right. Right. Definitely taking up some real estate in the head. Josh Bina, you said you have a least favorite chapter?
Yeah. Before I go to that, it's funny that, like, Evan mentions that, like, you know, Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, because Patrick Kane is like, has done a lot of horrible things. So yeah, it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. I guess I have varying degrees. Like, there are chapters that I'm excited for people to read. There are chapters I absolutely hated writing that I didn't enjoy researching for. I think it's like a combination of the two. I would say the part that I hated the most, but I think I am the most excited for people to read, is the one that tackles sexual assault and domestic violence.
Which I'm sure there's plenty of Patrick Kane in that one.
I actually, you know, it's funny, I actually didn't include him intentionally, because I know that there's a lot of people like to use him as a reason to discredit sexual assault survivors, because they're like, what happened with his most recent case, which is just, it's so wild and it's really hard to untangle. And I think given the space we had, that I wouldn't have been able to do it justice. So I took a look at examples where players have been, actually gone to jail for sexual assault, and you know, are either still playing pro hockey now or were playing pro hockey back in the day. But that's part of the thing with, like, sexual assault and domestic violence, is it's so complex to explain, and it's so, like, difficult, and it's just, like, writing it in a way that people will understand the nuances that go behind it, and, you know, the difference between someone not being proven guilty in court and whether they should still be playing, and, you know, why most cases don't even go to court or why victims don't pursue them. And then especially, like, with domestic violence, we just really noticed with Jake Vertanen, actually, that the NHL still doesn't have a domestic violence policy. And, like, it's not something that I'm as familiar with as I am with sexual assault, and, like, trying to research and explain and, like, talk to all these people, because the question we're really, like, I was looking to answer is, how do we prevent this from happening? And it was a really hard thing. And I talked to so many people, and I ended up with all these quotes, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I have to be able to answer it if I'm going to tell our readers. And it was really, really difficult. And I think it was really the last thing that I finished. But I'd say that it was my least favorite chapter to write, for sure. But I'm excited for people to read it, because I think, you know, even looking back at what's happened recently, like, I think it's really helpful for people to know. And, like, even now I see people explaining, like, oh, like, so-and-so shouldn't do this, or, like, they shouldn't kick him off the team, or, like, what if it's not proven in court? And, like, you know, we wrote through all of that. So, like, I kind of want to present it to people and be like, here you go. Please read this. Stop asking stupid questions. but I would think that my favorite thing to write about was probably the structure, because it makes no sense. And it's just, hockey is such a unique structure. And I'm fortunate that I've covered men's and women's hockey at pretty much every level. Like, I've covered high school, prep. I've covered juniors, I've covered college, I've covered pro. So, like, I know more than a lot of people the ins and outs and how it relates to each other. And that within that, like, there's a subset of like the cost of hockey and knowing the organization, the structure, like I know where there are costs that people don't really think of when it comes to hockey, which is a major barrier. But it was really interesting to go through and realize that the structure in both Hockey Canada and USA Hockey is just a total mess. And that's like a big reason why everything is as bad as it is right now.
Well, you just mentioned, obviously, areas that you know really well. I'm sure, you know, both of you obviously have lived with some of these issues that you're writing about. But like you said, with the domestic violence, there's also some bits and pieces that maybe you're not as familiar with. Is there anything that sticks out in the process of researching this book that like either set off a light bulb for either of you, or that you just thought was an interesting thing that you didn't expect to learn?
I guess for me, I remember one of our many texts to each other, you know, Josvita asked me to, you know, tackle the section on ableism. And admittedly, yeah, it's a blind spot for me, you know, and you think of ableism, like off the top of your head, you think of a kid that's wheeled out for a Make-A-Wish Foundation thing, a kid in a wheelchair, and they take a couple pictures smiling, and that's it. And speaking with a deaf hockey player, in the sense of our conversations were all through text when I was interviewing her for the book. And then another person I know, his condition has to do with, because he was a kid guy, grew up on the south side of Chicago, and he, you know, was a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and he suffered a back injury in the Army. And, you know, him talking about how he had to explain to, you know, family how he kind of feels from the day to day, and also, you know, reacting himself back into society after, you know, being in, you know, in the service. And obviously other, you know, bird I spoke with, they had some other conditions, but I don't want to give too much of that away. But yeah, this, it was something where I had to learn, and we had to get out of, you know, I fasten myself as a progressive person, but I've learned a lot from writing this book. And I also have learned a lot from Jasmina. I mean, yeah, I'm a black man who grew up in America and I have my stuff and I just using everything else, but there are some blind spots in terms of how I see things, in terms of how, you know, you or Josvina may, or any other woman may see things. I have to sit back and think about like, well, okay, well, I didn't, you know, see it that way. But now, you know, it's something that, you know, I keep in mind and inform in even my own writing.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with Evan there, like, which I think was really one of the benefits of co-writing this book, is being able to learn from each other and have different experiences to piggyback off of. I think for me, there was a lot of stuff that I knew, but I didn't necessarily have like the hard facts to back it up. So I think what probably stood out to me the most is like, so my mom is a teacher. I work for a nonprofit. So I work with kids right now. I've tutored kids. Like I've been in youth serving organizations. I was a teacher for a little bit. So like I have a very education extensive background, like working with kids. And it's really like absolutely wild to me that there are people we put in charge of our children who we don't do a good job of vetting, you know, whether that's in terms of people, what values are they imparting to our children, or I don't know if you're familiar with it, but, and this was actually something that I wasn't familiar with either, but there's a coach in Canada, Graham James, who was sexually abusing his players for a very long time. He continuously got away with it. And, you know, just the lack of vetting and the lack of, you know, any kind of, I don't even know how to say it, but it's like, you know, we're not putting enough due process and due thought into these people that we're entrusting with the safety of our kids. And like, I work for a youth serving organization right now. Like I know the background checks, I know the processes, I know the protocols that have to be followed before you entrust someone with a child. And it's just absolutely alarming to me that that it's not, we don't consider that when it comes to sports. And it's not just hockey. I mean, you see it everywhere. And now more and more we're hearing these stories, and it's just like, you know, it's still not changing. And that's just, it's wild to me that that's not changing. Yeah,
that's terrifying. Evan mentioned off the top, this book is going to piss a lot of people off. As you're going through it and talking back and forth, like, what was your philosophy on, like, how much do we want to really kind of poke the bear, right? How much are we worried about people getting angry? How much do we think that that's a necessary piece of this? And how are you thinking about your audience as you're writing this?
I don't know. Like, I can't speak for Evan on this, but I will say for me, like, I crossed that threshold many years ago. So now I'm just full steam ahead. Like, whatever I don't even care anymore. I'm like, whatever, I'll say whatever I want. So that's like, I'm not afraid of upsetting anybody, because at this point I've pretty much pissed off everyone who I am going to piss off. And the people left standing by me are the ones that are going to be standing by me no matter what.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, as for me, I've been writing about a lot of this stuff for years, especially, you know, locally, and I've gotten some nasty stuff over the years, and I'm just kind of like, okay, you know, whatever. I mean, I'm not the one who put your fandom in a weird place. Your favorite player did, you know, and you know, and that's where it's at. And I guess for me, I remember, like, it's in the book, one of the chapters, like at the very top, I talk about how, you know, when Colin Kaepernick, like, he'll, like, once in a while, like, tweet something, and he tweeted about, you know, the July 4th holiday, and he basically said, like, hey, you know, black people were slaves at that time, you know, it was just true, you know, and a member of the Chicago Blackhawks beat, you know, tweeted at him and said, you know, what white people usually say when black people, you know, talk in this way, and they say, you know, like, hey, if you don't like this country, you know, leave. Yeah. And, you know, I quote tweeted it, and I was like, well, yeah, you know, that people who love America or the most patriotic often, you know, criticize it. You know, you raise the tweet and everything else. So I thought about putting that person's name in the book, and I was just like, hey, I'm going to put this person on blast. I want all the smoke and the clouds. But if I do that, you know, it's only going to be, you know, directed at that person. Everyone says, oh, it's only that guy and not the whole, you know, mm-hmm. issue. And when that happens, if you just not say that person's name, you're sitting there thinking about, okay, who's he talking about? Okay, who's this? Who's that? And it goes to, I'm not saying this person is racist or anything like that, but it goes to the whole thing of how we look at racist behavior. Like, a lot of people seem to think, a lot of folks, particularly white people, seem to think that it's something that's, it happens occasionally, you know, like the Olympics or Haley's Comet. If not, they don't see it as something prevalent and systemic that happens all the time.
Oh, the racism comments like coming today. Get ready.
Yeah, because it's like you want to say it's racist, but it's like we only say that to black people. You know, like we didn't say that to any of those fools that ran up in the Capitol building trying to, you know, to kill the cop and did all types of stuff. We don't say that to them, but and one person says, like, hey, bring up the fact that, hey, you know, that black people have a complicated legacy with, you know, with the July 4th holiday, you know, like, bringing that up is not wrong. It's literally not wrong, but people jumping this guy mentioned, and you're just like, if someone is saying that who we look to for information on your, I look to for information on my favorite hockey team, he can't be the only one that thinks that way.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you don't, pointing specific people out almost takes away from your point that,
hey, we're talking about the whole culture. I'm just saying, like, in general, like, you know, we name names.
Name the names on Twitter, but the book,
yeah,
we're looking at the broad picture.
It depends on who it is and the situation. Like, we definitely went after, we didn't go after, but we obviously talked about John Bambi's work pretty extensively. So definitely, like, the public figures, the players, people in positions of power, like, and we even have, like, a section where we talked about the media and how they handle, reporting on these topics. And in that case, it's like, yes, your name and attached to what you wrote. But it's funny because I had a coach asking me the other day, like, what are you doing? Are you like going after people? And I'm like, yes and no, like not really. Like Evan was saying, but yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
I think that people, when you write a book that picked at their favorite sport in a negative way, they think we're trying to, like, as we're saying these days, cancel hockey. Like, no, we just feel like a lot of conversations, you know, need to happen that permeates the sport. I mean, there's a lot of issues. We talk about hockey because we both love hockey. It's our favorite sport. So we're going to talk about issues within that sport. So, I mean, yeah, do we talk about issues that's happened in baseball and basketball and football and other sports? Yeah, we do mention that in the book, but our book is overarchingly, you know, hockey centric. So right. We're going to talk about issues that have to do with, like I said earlier, we're not the ones who put your favorite coach or player or in a weird space. Man, they put you in that space, you know, and you as the fan or the observer. And, you know, it's a thing where it's like what I've seen from people talk about it or anytime I've written about these issues, me or Josh Vina or other folks have written about these issues in the past, like even just to get the publisher to believe in us, you know, was an insurmountable task. Like we were on our third or fourth publisher when Triumph took us in, you know, and I was actually shocked, you know, when they did, because they've written books about some of the people we've mentioned. And we were kind of like, how do they kind of feel about that? One book has them looking all in this pedestal and we're like, that person is low key piece of shit. You really like, if you want to look, you know, like, but it's, you know, but so it was a thing where it was like the publishers that we thought that would be down for the book, that would be a slam dunk, weren't. And the one that we thought wouldn't was. And I asked, and we had that conversation. I remember our first conversation, it kind of goes back to what I was saying a lot. LeBron, one of the people, the team, like, yeah, hockey players are so great, they're so down to earth. I'm like, yeah, well, that's it. Like, you know, like, why do we see them that way and not other athletes, you know? And so, yeah, it all kind of goes back to all of that, like having these tough conversations about a sport that's been allowed to operate in the cut and say and do some pretty awful shit. And what Josh Vina was mentioning about John Van Driebroek, we don't want to get into the backstory because we want people to read it, but just, you know, imagine, you know, back when, you know, when Donald Sterling had to sell the Clippers because of all the stuff he did, and the very next game, he's sitting behind the team bench. Like, people would have lost their shit. It'd probably been a fight or two or three, you know? And because this sport operates in the cut, it doesn't have the scrutiny that the other three major sports has. They've been allowed to do some foul shit because of it.
That's fascinating. Well, I want to go back to what you said about the publishers. Why do you think that it ended up being flipped with who you expected to jump for the book and who you expected to be more hesitant.
I mean, in our field, I mean, we often talk to people who've been, it's taken a page of your last podcast with Russ, and in terms of, you know, having people like that in your corner and people you go to when things happen, whatever. I talked to a lot of people I know that I look towards as mentors and for counsel who have written books, and they basically was like, you know, like hockey books, and even in the States, and even up north, are a tough sell. And a hockey book talking about what we're talking about, there's not a book out there like this. And I mean, there are books where they talk about racism or in certain ways and everything else, but we're taking like a pretty much wide view of why things the way they are. And there's times where, because I feel like people aren't really against diversity in hockey in the sense that, you know, they're not like, oh, get out of here, young person who isn't white. You know, it's more so like when we start talking about these issues, why there's a lack of diversity. You just literally, I've done interviews, Josh Vina can probably speak to this too. I've literally had done interviews where like the air literally sucked out the room because I discussed some hard truths about some things, and we have to talk about who, what, when, where, and the why. We can't skip it. We always tell people, you know, hockey needs therapy. I mean, it needs intervention. If you have any experience in therapy or intervention, you have to talk about the past, because how many times have we seen people in the past year because of social unrest and a pandemic was like, yeah, that's the past, so what can we do now? Like, no, we got to talk about the past. It's the reason why people were so angry in the streets and doing things they normally wouldn't do, because they literally saw, you know, somebody's calling for their dead mother while they were dying, which happened in Minnesota, which is like to call themselves the state of hockey. So, you know, we tie that in too. And you just see these folks, all uncomfortable conversation. Nobody really wants to talk about, you know, race in these ways. And we're talking about a sport where a lot of these people are friends, they're drinking buddies, their kids go to the same school together, they're part of the same communities. And it goes back to, I know I'm being kind of long-winded here, it kind of goes back to a lot of reasons why I write the book, why I wrote the book, and also, you know, why I made the decision to have my daughter, you know, introduce her to hockey. And in the book, I discuss how I was called an N-word by a teammate, and I didn't tell anyone about it. I internalized it. Like, and if something were that, like that to happen to her, I don't want her to say something right away. You got to kick the kid's ass on the ice right there? Good, we'll handle it. You know, let me take those shots, you know, and you know, you can handle it right then and there, but I don't want her to be, because I'm 42 and this happened when I was a sophomore in high school. So if it still bothers me decades later, why I didn't say anything, even back then I knew I had to put this in this situation in the hands of white people who historically have not done right by us when we tell them about these issues. So, you know, it was a lot to think about as I was writing it and thinking about my own daughter and her mother's aware of like some of the stuff that happens with the sport. Unfortunately, and so much has even happened since we turned in the book in January. I mean, shit. I'm like, we can start it. We can do a part two. We wanted to.
I just sent an email to our editor like over the weekend. Like, hey, I think we should add this. I know it's really late.
Have similar things coming up for you, Josh Vina, where you're going through and it's just bringing up a lot of your personal experiences?
Actually, I don't think so. I think for me, it was cathartic to write through because I talk a lot about this stuff in like bits and pieces, but I never really get a chance to like look into it and explain it. And I think for my own benefit is being a survivor of sexual assault as well. Like I've always used journalism to cope with things. So to be able to look at it analytically and say like, this is what it is, like these are the facts, was actually like very calming for me to do. Unfortunately, I also had to read about a lot of really awful stuff that happened to a lot of people, like with the whole Graham James thing and just with other instances of sexual assault and all that stuff, which not even like personally triggering, it's just really awful to read about that happening to somebody. But I know Evan said that, you know, people don't really want to talk about this stuff, and they don't. But what I did find that gave me hope is that I did find players who wanted to talk about this, and players who talked to me for like 3 hours because they don't have anyone else to talk about it with. And I think like that's the big step we have to figure out is we have good people. Now, how do we empower them to be active bystanders instead of passive ones? You know, how do we empower them to be able to change something within their team when it's only one of them who believes in the right thing and everyone else believes in the wrong thing?
Well, that's actually a really good transition to the last topic I want to bring up before I let you go. The last part of your book's title is How to Fix It. And obviously, to get the full scope of it, we all have to go read your book, which I'm so excited to do. I have it on pre-order. Comes out in October, right?
Yes.
So, but if you were to just give kind of the bullet points for hockey fans, what can they start doing? What should they be aware of?
So this is where I take a long sip of beer and tell you that it can't be fixed.
Very long sip.
I'm being over dramatic, but I mean, it's hard, I think, with the people who are in charge currently. That's not to say there aren't things you can do. There are a lot of things that individuals can do, which I'm proud that myself and Evan have been able to, you know, find the answers to those questions. But when we think about like how to change the NHL, the NHL still doesn't have a domestic violence policy. Gary Bettman doesn't care. Like if he doesn't care, it's not going to happen, which is like kind of the despair part. Which I'm trying not to be like too despairy about it. But I mean, in terms of that, like it's kind of like hitting a brick wall. And I honestly don't have an answer. And nobody I talk to has an answer for that, except that you got to wait until these people, you know, someone I interviewed was like, we just got to wait until these people die. Which is shock, but like, how? You look at the makeup of the people who are in charge, you know, you look at John Van Beesbrook, like where are we going to make that change?
Yeah, I mean, as a person who's registered with U.S. Hockey as a player and whose daughter is registered as a player, I mean, the guy they put in charge, one of the people they put in charge, as we know it, you know, most likely hates black people, you know? So, yeah, I've seen interviews and everything else, but it's like, you know, he never been pressed on of all the words he could have used to shame a black player, his team captain. You know, he made a grown ass man made a conscious decision to use those words on at least two different occasions that we know of, you know? So that's where it's at, you know, right there. They basically brought him back and tried to rebrand him people didn't forget. Even Trevor was like poorly still pissed over him. He's still pissed. I mean, like, so that like means something or account for something, you know? And it's like, that's what gotten people like us in trouble, and why, you know, the folks behind the 1619 project are in trouble with different folks, where we've taken this view on, you know, things like critical race theory and other things, where we just like, well, you don't really see it getting better. It's systemic, it's rotten to the core. And, mm-hmm. you know, it might have to take some people, you know, going away one way or another to fix. But as we said in all the pre-order links for the book and everything else, this book is for the modern hockey fan. If you don't think you're a modern hockey fan, you should, I guess, you know, do something else that day, you know? But also, if, you know, I honestly hope that someone who may have these issues and think that we're doing something wrong by talking about this, like somebody around them, like, read the book and be like, hey, you know, I'm not saying like if someone has something negative to say, then go buy the book, but we like you to at least, you know, think about it, you know, and we gotta find a way to I guess try to get better at society when it comes to this stuff. But I honestly, you know, there's a lot historically to say it's never going to happen. But the thing is, with the whole book, people will try to say like, oh, I didn't know about this and about this, down the third. Like, y'all been new. Like, this isn't something that people aren't aware of. It's, you made a conscious decision to stick your head in the sand. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people out there are like, no, we're going to talk about this. And it's honor to write this. It's an honor to write this book with someone who's like-minded in that sense. But also, we know that a lot of people are supporting us because they want to see change. A lot of people, like, we put this out here, we're doing it. They sent us a bunch of stuff, a bunch of instances, mm-hmm. and other things, and you know, studies and everything else. Like, there's a concerted effort for people who want to see this book. And we've had some people that's been helping us on the way. We have some people that are doing it because of me, or doing it because of her, or doing it because of the both of us. So we have all these different groups and people, you know, that want to see us and, you know, especially the book succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I mean, I was really shocked. Like, I've been around Division I hockey for over a decade now. And I know it very well, very, very, very well, unfortunately. And I was really surprised. I had a player who's a current Division I player reach out to me, actually, and tell me he wanted to talk about it. And I was so incredibly shocked because, I mean, it's mostly all white, but also, like, you take the NHL's problems and, like, it's even worse in college hockey. Like, for so many reasons, it's just worse. And I was really surprised, I think, at the people that I had who used to play hockey or, you know, are playing right now, be like, yeah, I want to talk about this because this is ridiculous and I can't be the only one. Like, this is insane. Why is this happening? And I mean, like, sort of along those lines, I know, like, I was talking about the other day, I was talking about Ryan Miller, because he's retiring now, and I interviewed him for the book. And, you know, he's this pretty well-known, you know, rich white hockey player. And to have him go on the record and, like, talk about what he's seen in terms of the bigotry in hockey, I think is important, because I'm not saying it's okay, but I do see that a lot of, like, white male players who are in college are just not going to say anything because they're like, no one else says anything. And if I say anything, I'm going to be kicked off the team. So I think it's important to see that there are people who are in those positions who are like you that are saying something. I don't know if I'm conveying this well, but something along, like, those lines. And I was going to say something else, but I forgot. Oh, yeah. I was going to actually say that. I mean, it sounds depressing when we're like, yeah, it's systemic. I don't think you can fix it. But I think it's important to really be aware of that, because you can't go into a situation like, you just can't go into a situation thinking that you can change it and it'll be all butterflies and magic, and then, you know, keep running into this brick wall because you didn't realize this brick wall was a brick wall. You know, if you know the brick wall is a brick wall, then you at least can pace yourself. I think you have a better understanding of how you're going to run into this brick wall, as opposed to if you think it's a wall, like a grass wall in a hedge maze or something. Because there are still things that you can do. And I think the more people that speak up, you know, the more kids that speak up, the players that they teach who are below them, like, there are things that can change. And then in the hopes that we can at least make a dent in the way things are run right now.
Sure. So if I'm understanding this right, to steal your metaphor, it's kind of like, you can't just run in with your shoulder into that brick wall and it's going to fall down. We're all going to have to go at it and chip away at it. And who knows how long that's going to take to chip away at a full brick wall, but at least we can start.
Yeah. And also, because if you run into it with your shoulder, you're going to break your shoulder and you're going to be miserable. So you have to know what you're getting into before you attempt to do it.
For sure. Well, that's all I have for you guys, unless there's anything else you want to add.
No, that's all I got. You actually had the honor of us getting both of us, the first interview of both of us talking about the book together. So
I'm honored.
Yeah, yep. So you can shoot out your air horns and everything else. But, because so far it's just either her being on a podcast or me being on a podcast, but to have us together, like, this is the first time, and knowing the missing of your show, I think it's great that you were able to, you know, interview with both. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you two are definitely the first non-baseball guests I've had on here, but I think it really connects to, I think, There's definitely some crossover between the systemic issues in baseball and the systemic issues in hockey. And I think it's neat to be able to step back and hear about it in a different, I guess, field, venue, however you want to put it. Because, yeah, we're all, even if we're in different sports, we're fighting against some of the same looming problems.
Yeah, we do talk about Al Campanis and how scouting folks that, you know, when in terms of scouting, how they view certain players from certain demographics. And when Campanis said what he said, you know, it was like, well, if he's uncomfortable saying that on TV, you know, he's obviously not the only one who thinks that way. And, you know, and when players are, it's kind of similar to NFL, when black players are kind of shuttled off, like our quarterbacks are then shuttled off to another position because they don't have like the smarts or whatever. We saw that recently with Justin Fields. And in hockey, it's called, you know, hockey sense. So it's virtually the same thing. You know, it's like, and obviously in baseball, there's a discrepancy, there's a big difference, a stark difference in the number of black players, but also, you know, managers and front office folks. I mean, so it's virtually all the same thing.
Yeah. And I also think like there's a lot you can learn from what other sports are doing or are not doing. I'm pretty sure this is correct, but I'm not 100% sure. I think the NHL is the only major professional league of the four ones that does not actually have a domestic violence policy. And I know that it's been pressed upon from other people. I know the NFL had to go through and like redo everything after what happened with Ray Rice, but it's like, you can look at what the other leagues are doing or what has happened there and see where they're either failing or where in the case, you know, are succeeding and why they're succeeding and, you know, what's been effective for them and how can we use that and learn from that and make ourselves better.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm so excited to read the book for all you listeners out there. It's, again, Game Misconduct, Hockey's Toxic Culture and How to Fix It, available for pre-order now and set to release in October. Thank you both so much for joining me. This has been awesome getting to chat with you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we only really knew each other from Twitter and from Lawrence. And because of the pandemic, I mean, we'll probably, you know, once it's all, you know, or we'll cross paths it at some point. So, yeah.
Yeah, we can all get coffee or take those long sips of beer together.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Of course.
So great talking to both of them, getting their perspective, learning a little more about hockey beyond just learning what icing is, for example. And I do think there's a ton of crossover in battles that are being fought within hockey and baseball and society writ large, but we'll just focus on those two for now. I think that's enough of a challenge ahead, right? Instead of just tackling all of humanity. But I really love that metaphor that Josh Fina brought up of the wall. And I think that's really applicable to Major League Baseball too, where we change is going to be slow. And we need to understand what we're up against. And I say it's going to be slow. It has been slow, right? If you look back at the history of baseball, it's definitely a sport that, in good ways and bad, has really held on to tradition, right? But that's come out in some really ugly ways. And we need to understand that in order to, as she was saying with hockey, not just run head on into the wall and, you know, and pop your shoulder out. But, you know, it's also a thing where I do think we're making incremental change. I think, you know, just for example, and the one that I've written the most about in the past year and have the most personal experience about, if we're talking about women within baseball, it wasn't that long ago that women were finally let into clubhouses, right? Into the locker rooms. Go back to that first episode that I did with Claire Smith, and she was kicked out of a locker room at one point. These things are not just, it's not just stuff that we're going to get over and get past, right? When it's great that we're starting to confront some of the sexual assault and sexual harassment that's happening within the sport. But we do have to understand that this is just the surface. And to bring back the wall metaphor, just to, you know, beat that one into the ground, we are just starting to chip away. And there's a lot more wall there. And it's going to be a brutal process. I know I have found myself feeling, frankly, exhausted while reporting on and writing about and talking about the various sexual harassment allegations that have come out in the last year. And I'm like, that's tough, but we'll keep going and we'll keep chipping away. And, you know, that's just one example, one very small example of a lot of things that baseball is starting to come to terms with. And, you know, hopefully we'll make progress, right? We'll answer that last part of the book title, the how to fix it. Even if it's not fixing everything right now, even if it's beginning to fix several things and seeing how they go and continuing to work on them indefinitely. That's my hope, and that's where I think we can learn a ton from this conversation and their book and hockey. So that's been another edition of More Than a White Man's Game, a baseball and one-time hockey podcast on the House of L Network. Thanks so much to Lawrence Holmes for producing this show and for creating the network and all that he does to lift up young journalists and everyone within House of L. So thanks to you all for listening. Rate, subscribe, review, and I will see you next time.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.